So my dad was born in 1935. He turned 89 years old 2 weeks ago. He grew up in Louisville. His family back in the day had an old silver tone radio that was kind of the center of information and entertainment in their home for as long as he can remember. Now, we had that radio in our house when I was growing up. It was more of a decoration than anything else. It was a shortwave radio, if you're familiar with those at all. Had tubes inside. We actually had it working for a little while when I was a kid, and we could pick up stations from all over the world. I refinished the cabinet of that radio when I was in high school, and we used it as a prop for a play when I was in college. And all that's pretty much ancient history now, but that radio has been around the block a time or two, you know? In fact, if you know anything about Louisville in the 1930s, you know that the Ohio River flooded in 1937. States up and down the Ohio River dealt with that flood. It was a pretty big deal. And there are water stains on the bottom of the radio because the 37 flood impacted my dad's family also. A lot of history, a lot of family history tied to that one piece of furniture, if you will. Well, today, that radio sits in my favorite room in our house, the man hall. Okay, I don't have a man cave. I have a man hall. It connects the kitchen to the bedroom. It's not a man hole, okay, as it has been called by some who misunderstood me. It is the man hall, okay, H-A-L-L. The radio sits in there. I want to tell you the most asked question that I get about that radio. People do not ask me, typically, what kind of wood is the cabinet made of? People don't usually ask, what's the brand? Where did the water stains come from? Will it play hip-hop music? Okay, those aren't the questions that I usually get. The most asked question is, does it work? Does it work? And not does it work as in, does it punch a clock 9 to 5 Monday through Friday? Does it work as in, does it turn on? Does it still pick up radio stations around the world? Listen, it's important. Does it still fulfill its intended purpose? That's the question. Does it do what it was made to do? When we think about that word work, sometimes we think about physical work or manual labor. Sometimes we think about mental work, kind of intellectual type labor. And we have words like workload, workstation, workout, work ethic, workbench, workflow, workbook, workmanship, workaholic. We have all kinds of work kind of words. There's work that you get paid to do. There's work that you volunteer to do. And there's work that you just do because it needs to be done and nobody else will do it. And so it's just work. We celebrated Labor Day this past Monday, ironically, where we don't go to work because we're happy that we have work, okay? Kind of a holiday for that. We're going to talk today about what the Bible says about work, because it says a lot about it. We are wrapping up today our firewall series. We have been studying through the book of Proverbs, and we're going to see that the book of Proverbs in the Old Testament has a lot to say about work. This series, all through, has kind of focused on boundaries that God has given to us. Just like a firewall on a computer kind of creates a barrier and protects the hard drive and the operating system, the firewalls in Proverbs protect us. They help us live lives that are healthy and productive. And so we've talked about physical boundaries, spiritual boundaries, financial, sexual, relational boundaries Clay talked about last week. Today, I want to zero in on this idea of vocational boundaries. Whether your vocation takes you to a place of business or you work from home, whether you're a stay-at-home mom or dad, maybe a homeschool teacher, whether you get paid for your vocation or you just work out of the goodness of your heart, man, the Bible has a lot to say about work. Before we get into work ethics and work schedules and work balance, I want to take you back to that question of the radio. Does it work? Does it fulfill its intended purpose? See, I think a lot of people kind of believe that God gave us work as a punishment for our sin. You remember in the Garden of Eden when the man and woman disobeyed God, Adam and Eve ate from the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. God punished the woman by saying she would be bound to her husband and she would have pain in childbirth. He punished the man by saying that he would have to work to grow his crops, to feed his family. It'd be hard work. He was going to do it by the sweat of his brow. And so a lot of people kind of look at that and they say, well, obviously work was God's punishment for their sin. But not really. See, after God created the universe, the book of Genesis says that God rested from his work. Well, obviously he wasn't working to punish himself. No, work is a part of God's nature. It's who he is. In the New Testament, Jesus said that his Father is always working, and he said, I too am working. Jesus is a worker. And then, in the book of Genesis, God gave Adam and Eve work to do in the Garden of Eden before they ever sinned. They were told to subdue the earth, to rule over it, to work the garden and take care of it. Work was God's plan from the very beginning. I would go so far as to say that work is our intended purpose. At least one key purpose is that we were made to do that. Now, after Adam and Eve sinned, part of their punishment was painful toil to produce a crop, battling thorns and thistles, weeds and pests, floods and droughts. That was their punishment. The punishment was not work, it was yard work. Okay, that was the punishment. And man, we still endure it today. I mean, seriously, work has always been part of God's plan. From the very beginning, it was a gift. God gave us the capacity, the opportunity to do something meaningful and something productive. All right, so one more time, think about that old radio. Does it work? And sure, I mean, it's a nice piece of furniture. It's a lovely antique. But does it fulfill its intended purpose? The purpose for which it was made, does it do what it was created to do? And sadly, no, it doesn't anymore. But friends, I believe that your purpose, my purpose, is to work, to be productive. Not just to punch a clock, not to kind of slog your way through a 9-to-5 job that you hate, but to do something productive with our lives. Proverbs says a lot about that. Now, there's a word in the book of Proverbs. I just love this word. It's such an awesome word because it's so descriptive. You know, it's just so picturesque. It's the word sluggard. Isn't that a great word, sluggard, right? I mean, you just kind of picture that as this lazy guy on the couch kind of, you know, slurping up his spaghetti there because he doesn't want to have to pick up a fork. I mean, just unwilling to work. Not somebody unable to work. Talking about people unwilling to work. This word sluggard is closely tied to a disgusting little creature you often find crawling around in your yard. A slug, right? The Oxford Dictionary, are they gross? They define slugs as a tough-skinned terrestrial mollusk which typically lacks a shell and secretes a film of mucus for protection. Basically, a slug is a snail minus the shell that is covered in snot. Okay, I mean, I'm seriously, they're just gross. All right, snails and slugs are typically slow moving. Snails are a little different than slugs. They're not quite as gross, not quite as creepy. There are jokes, there are dad jokes about slugs and snails. And I'm a dad. So what did the slug say when he was riding on the turtle's back? Wee! Okay. There was a man who heard a knock at the door. He came to the door and he opened it. There was a slug on the front porch looking for a handout. He picked the slug up. He threw it out in the yard, went back in, washed all that spooge off his hands. 3 weeks later, here's another knock at the door. He opens the door. The slug says, "What'd you do that for?" Took him 3 weeks to get back to the door. Okay, I knew you understood that. Okay, the point is, slugs are sluggish. Okay, that's the point, right? They don't move very fast. They don't have much get up and go. It's not like, slow down, slug, I'm trying to catch you. I mean, it's just not like that. Well, in Proverbs chapter 6, Solomon offers a contrast between the ant and the sluggard, or in the animal natural world, we might think of the ant and the slug. Okay? This is what Proverbs 6:6 says. Go to the ant, or consider the ant, you sluggard. Consider its ways and be wise. It has no commander, no overseer or ruler, yet it stores its provisions in summer and gathers its food at harvest. How long will you lie there, you sluggard? When will you get up from your sleep? A little sleep, a little slumber, a little folding of the hands to rest, and poverty will come on you like a bandit, and scarcity like an armed man. See, throughout this book of Proverbs, there's a contrast between the diligent worker and the lazy sluggard. Ants and slugs just have a very different approach to life. And so do the diligent and the lazy. Today, I want to show you some of those contrasts. All right, we're going to kind of dig in, look at some verses all over the book of Proverbs, because it shows us the difference between the diligent and the lazy. And if work is a gift from God, and I believe it is, and if it's one of our intended purposes, and I believe that it is, then we need to get this right. This is important. So here's the first thing I want you to notice. Number one, the diligent show initiative, the lazy refuse to work. What did Solomon say about ants? The ant has no commander, no overseer, no ruler, and yet it stores its provision in summer. It gathers its food at harvest. Ants don't work because they have an employer, a boss, a job foreman, a slave driver who's cracking the whip and demanding obedience. No, ants work because God built into them a tremendous work ethic. They are in perpetual motion because God made them that way. They face every task with gusto. I learned this week. Ants are categorized as the strongest creatures on earth because they can lift 5,000 times their own body weight. The sluggard, on the other hand, the lazy man or woman who refuses to work, spends their time just lying around, nothing to show for their lack of effort. Poverty is their destiny. Now listen. Not all poor people are lazy, not by a long shot. Some lazy people are not poor because they have an inheritance, or they have a trust fund, or mom or dad or a spouse who's willing to foot the bill. But in general, and that's what Proverbs are, they're kind of general principles. In general, lazy people come to financial ruin because they refuse to work. So Solomon says, the diligent show initiative, the lazy refuse to work. Now take a look at Proverbs 10:5. He who gathers crops in summer is a wise man, wise son, excuse me. But he who sleeps during harvest is a disgraceful son. So the diligent are wise, the lazy are disgraceful. Now listen, this is not a sermon about busyness. Oh, that you should live your life in a perpetual frenzy. I'm not advocating workaholism. You know, whatever you do, don't stop and smell the roses. That's not what we're saying here. We're advocating, Solomon is advocating, to be diligent, not to be hyperactive. Some of you probably need a sermon on slowing down. I mean, this sermon is just kind of white noise for you because the last thing you need is to work any harder. It's like, please take a break. Just remember, Solomon's writing to his sons. He's teaching them the importance of a strong work ethic, just like we teach that to our kids today. Kids, not all, but kids often lean toward laziness unless they have a positive example and they're taught the opposite. Lazy people, Solomon says, are disgraceful. Diligent people are wise. They're wise because they use their time well. They plan ahead. They don't necessarily work harder, but they work smarter. I found an interesting verse in Proverbs 24. It kind of surprised me at first. It might surprise you. It's Proverbs 24:27. It says, finish your outdoor work and get your fields ready. After that, build your house. And you might think, well, it sure makes more sense to me to build my house first before I worry about the yard. But kind of think of it like this. Suppose you're one of those settlers who moved west in a Conestoga wagon back in the day, and you got somewhere west of St. Louis and you found you a nice plot of land and you decided you're going to be a farmer right there. And so you spend all spring and summer building your house and you don't plant any crops that first year, and then you starve to death before spring. And that just really kind of backfires. Solomon says, plant your crops first, then you can build your house while the crops are growing, and then you can harvest, and then you can do it again next year. And the house will already be there. Summer won't be quite so hard. The sluggard doesn't plant crops or build a house. The unwise worker builds his house first, and the reward for all that hard work is to starve to death. Or you can be a wise worker who plants and then builds and then harvests and then lives to plant another day. So it's about being strategic in how you work. Proverbs 10:26 suggests that counting on a sluggard to get the job done is like getting smoke in your eyes. First it's annoying, then it's painful. It could ultimately be disastrous. Don't count on a sluggard. The diligent are wise, the lazy are disgraceful. Now let me show you another one. Proverbs 14:23. All hard work brings a profit, but mere talk leads only to poverty. The diligent, I would suggest, number three here, the diligent earn enough, and the lazy never have enough. The diligent earn enough. Listen. I'm not advocating that you just earn more. I mean, people are just going to grab and consume, and I'm going to work all the overtime I can, and I'm just going to kill myself because I just got to get more. That's not the point. It's about earning enough to provide for ourselves, provide for our family, to be able to share with others in need, to be generous toward God. And Solomon says that work brings a profit. Sometimes the profit is a paycheck, but sometimes the profit is a feeling, kind of like, well, I feel good about myself today for working so hard. It's enjoying a job well done. Maybe the profit is knowing that you helped somebody else, even though you didn't make any money at all, or that you're gratified that you did your best at something that you tackled. When you have the privilege of doing what you love and you find satisfaction in your labor, it's just a blessing. Okay, in just a second, I'm going to show you a quick video. I love this video because it just brings back a really happy memory for me. But this is a guy. Look at this picture. This is a man that I met in France back in June. His name is Siegfried. Okay, ladies, yeah, he is that good looking. Look at me, okay? I want you to, let's talk about me here for a minute. Actually, Siegfried was an engineer, okay? Just a super nice guy. But he worked in an office all day, every day. He grew up in Chamonix, this beautiful town situated up in the Alps, very close to Mont Blanc, the highest peak in Europe. And one day he decided that he was making a living, but he was not living the life that he wanted to live. And so he quit his office job. He moved back to Chamonix, and now he is a guide for people who want to try extreme sports. He gets paid to do this, okay? This is his career, at least at this stage in his life. Take a look at this. He gets paid to do that, okay? I mean, he does. And some of you would think that would be a fate worse than death than to have that for a job. Others of you are thinking, can you sign me up? How do I go get that job right this minute, right? Because what he has done is he's matched what he loves with work. Now, every day is not great for him. He doesn't enjoy it all the time. I mean, nobody does. But when you can enjoy your work, now what a blessing that is. Now, look, I get it. Some of you are saying, my work's not like that. I found the best job I could find to pay the bills, and man, I hate every day, and it's just a drudgery. And I get it. I've had jobs that I did not enjoy in my past. But I believe even if you could make more money doing something else, but you find a job that you enjoy, a job that's fulfilling for you, a job that, yeah, may not be jumping off a mountain and paragliding every day, but that is meeting your needs and that you can find satisfaction there. Being content with that is a blessing from God. See, the diligent earn enough. The lazy never have enough. Now here's another proverb. This one's similar to the one we just read, but there's a subtle difference here I think it's worth mentioning. It's Proverbs 21:5. The plans of the diligent lead to profit, as surely as haste leads to poverty. I want you to pay special attention to the second half of that verse. Haste leads to poverty. I would suggest to you, number four here, is that the diligent make a plan and stick to it. The lazy rush to get finished and they fail in the process. Because, see, haste leads to poverty. Let me explain what I mean. Because you look at a slug, you say there's no haste there at all. But think of it like this. If you have a project that needs to be done, but you procrastinate, you don't budget your time, you refuse to work ahead, you end up having to rush at the last minute, and you just can't have any excellence at all in your work. I love the comic strip Calvin and Hobbes. It's my very favorite. We've got books. We used to read them with our kids. Calvin is a mischievous six-year-old, always getting into trouble. Hobbes is his stuffed animal tiger that comes to life when nobody else is around. Calvin hates homework, baths, and his babysitter, Roslyn. Well, in one scenario that went over several days, he's at the bus stop, and Susie, this girl who goes to school with him, reminds him he's supposed to be turning in his insect collection that day. He had forgotten all about it, so he tries to throw one together on the way to school. Only he's on the bus, he can't find any bugs, there's none in the windows, there's none on the floor. He gets to school, he's in the parking lot, he stomps on a bug, but then he can't get it off of his shoe. He tries to pass off a piece of lint as a bug. Susie said the teacher's going to notice. He said, oh, she's not paying that much attention. He does a little math in his head. It's 10 minutes till the bell. He needs 50 bugs. He said, all I got to do is find 5 bugs per minute. For 10 minutes, I can still get an A. Somehow, he ended up with a D minus minus rather than an F, but he got home and he was in all kinds of hot water. And Hobbes says to him that he hoped he learned his lesson. Maybe he should get started on his book report right away. And Calvin says, my what? And it just goes all over again. You know, he's not going to get around to that book either. Haste leads to poverty, Solomon says. You fritter your time away. You refuse to work ahead. You might end up having to rush and throw something together at the last minute, but it's probably not going to be any good. And look, a bug collection in first grade, maybe not that big of a deal. But I would prefer that the meat inspector at the grocery store not procrastinate and say, that meat's probably still good. I would rather the builder of the bridge I'm getting ready to drive over do his homework, plan well, and build a strong bridge. I would rather have the doctor actually look at my x-rays before he cuts me open for an operation. You know what I mean? You really don't want to procrastinate and put it off and then have to rush the job. The diligent make a plan. They stick with the plan. The lazy have to rush at the last minute and they fail in the process. Now take a quick look at Proverbs 21:25. The sluggard's craving will be the death of him because his hands refuse to work. All day long he craves for more, but the righteous give without sparing. I would suggest to you, number five, that the diligent share their provision with those in need, while the lazy want their provision without working for it. The lazy want a handout without working for it. You know, one of the sad realities of our government and our welfare system today, look, I'm all for helping people in need. Some of you might consider me a bleeding heart liberal, okay? I'm all for helping people who are in need. But there's a reality that there are families that are totally entrenched in generational poverty, and there are kids and grandkids who've never seen work in their lives, and they have just grown up in an atmosphere and in a culture that says, well, just wait around. People are going to take care of you and give you a handout. Solomon reminds his sons over and over again in Proverbs to help the needy, to serve the poor, to make sure that we're generous toward God and other people. But then he condemns the lazy for expecting to be served, all the while refusing to serve. So the diligent share their provision with those in need, while the lazy kind of want their provision without working for it. Okay, there's one more. Number six here. The diligent are blessed for their work. The lazy make excuses. Proverbs 27:18 says, "He who tends a fig tree will eat its fruit, and he who looks after his master will be honored." So do your job, and things are going to work out well. Verse 25 of Proverbs 27, "When the hay is removed and new growth appears, and the grass from the hills is gathered in." In other words, you've done your work. "The lambs will provide you with clothing. The goats will provide the price of a field. You will have plenty of goat's milk to feed you and your family and to nourish your servant girls." Basically, he says, the diligent have the security of knowing their needs are going to be provided for. The fruit of their labor, coupled with God's blessing, will sustain them. But then listen to what Solomon says about the sluggards in Proverbs 26:13. The sluggard says, "There's a lion in the road, a fierce lion roaming the streets." In other words, the sluggard says, "I can't possibly go outside and work because it's scary out there. It's dangerous out there. I could have, a lion could eat me alive." And then verse 14, "As a door turns on its hinges, so a sluggard turns on his bed. The sluggard buries his hand in the dish, but he's too lazy to bring it to his mouth." He won't even feed himself. "The sluggard is wiser in his own eyes than seven men who answer discreetly." He says the sluggard makes excuses why he can't work. He wastes his time kind of sleeping the most productive hours of the day away. He doesn't have the energy to even feed himself or take care of himself. And yet, instead of being embarrassed or ashamed, oh, he's proud of himself. He sees himself as wiser than all those busy ants over there because he's beat the system. Over and over again in Proverbs, Solomon condemns the lazy sluggard. But to the diligent, he says, and we've seen it, "Your initiative makes you wise. Hard work ensures that you will have enough. Finishing what you start invites God's favor, and God will bless you so that you can bless others." Now, whenever we talk about work, I think we have to say a word about balance. You've heard that phrase, "All work and no play makes Jack a dull boy." Well, it also gives Jack a heart attack. Okay, I mean, you know what? You need to take a break sometimes. I was listening to a radio show last Sunday. It's called Hidden Brain. Maybe you've heard that show. Every week they interview a scientist or an author or somebody that wants to show in some way how the human brain and the human body work together, how our brains impact our behavior and our health and our well-being. And the person that was being interviewed had done a study of people who are too busy over here and then people who have nothing to do. And in studying both groups, they found that they are equally unhappy. Those who are too busy live life at a frantic pace. They ruin most of their important relationships. They ruin their health in the process. But those over here with nothing to do kind of feel empty and meaningless in life. And the author of the study said, ironically, many people think, I mean, as they've been surveyed, if they struck it rich, they would immediately quit their job and take life easy. And yeah, I mean, I get it. If you hit the lottery, you know, or if you get some crazy inheritance you didn't know was coming, maybe you change jobs or maybe you travel a little more, you buy a newer car, you jump off a mountain and paraglide. I mean, I get it. But there's a whole long line of lottery winners who could vouch for the fact that taking life easy and trying to be comfortable and lazy is not all it's cracked up to be. That after a while, you start to feel pretty meaningless. I would go so far as to say that an unproductive life is incapable of honoring God. An unproductive life is incapable of honoring God. Nobody is productive every minute of the day. And look, I get your health may keep you from being as productive as you used to be. Maybe you've kind of aged out of the job that you loved or the ministry where you want to serve. But I believe everybody can be productive at something. Everybody can. We can pray no matter what kind of health situation that we're in. We can encourage other people. We can invest our time and our energy and our resources in cultivating a relationship with God. I learned something so interesting to me in my study this week. The Old Testament Hebrew word for work is avodah. And it's kind of a fascinating word because depending on the context, avodah can be translated to work, to serve, or to worship. The same word, depending on the context, can be translated to work, to serve, or to worship. I think that's amazing. It puts work and worship right together. This is the same word. I believe that our work can be an act of worship. And that doesn't mean, oh, well, that's because, Mark, you're the preacher. So, yeah, your work is an act of worship. Or Josh, the guys in the band, I mean, it's different than me. We're not talking about just preachers and missionaries here. The Apostle Paul wrote in the New Testament in Colossians 3:17, whatever you do, notice that, whatever you do, whether in word or in deed, do it all in the name of the Lord Jesus, giving thanks to God the Father through him. A few verses later, Colossians 3:23, whatever you do, there it is again, whatever you do, work at it with all your heart as working for the Lord, not for men, since you know that you will receive an inheritance from the Lord as a reward. It is the Lord Christ you are serving. Whatever you do the best you can to the glory of God. Dorothy Sayers wrote a little essay called Why Work? And she kind of gave this example. She said, the worst religious movies that she's ever seen, and she did not name the company, but she said they are produced by a company which prided itself in only hiring people for their piety or their spiritual depth. And she said, sure, it's great to hire people who love and serve the Lord, but then she said this, bad photography, bad acting, and bad dialogue produced a result that was so irreverent, the movies could not have been shown in churches without bringing Christianity into contempt. Basically, she said, God is not served by technical incompetence. A sloppy job by really nice people is still a sloppy job. You can have a pure heart. Wonderful, of course. But inferior work does not honor the Lord. And so we try to, the best of our ability, excel in the work that we do. You know, I think a lot of Christian people, maybe you felt this way, they kind of determine the preachers, the teachers, the Sunday school teachers, or the kids workers, children's ministry, they do spiritual work. And maybe you'd say, yeah, being a greeter at the door, serving the nursery, those are spiritual things as well. But, you know, I'm just a computer programmer. I just build homes. I just teach school. I'm just a medical professional. I make widgets. You know, what I do is secular work. And see, in the church, we've divided what's spiritual and what's secular, and then sometimes we make it sound like, well, the spiritual work's really important, and the secular work's not really all that important. Friends, the Bible never makes that distinction at all. Assuming that our work is God-honoring, okay, you're not in the mafia, you're not dealing drugs, you're not turning tricks or robbing banks. All honorable work, listen, it's important, all honorable work has the capacity to be an act of worship because you're doing it to the best of your ability to honor the Lord. It could be mowing grass. You could be CEO of the company. It doesn't matter. It's doing your work to the glory of God. Now, we've seen that diligent work is superior to laziness, and with that in mind, the bottom line today is just very simply, our work is an act of worship. I think that's very biblical. Our work, no matter what kind of work it is an act of worship. I once read that when true Christians enter the workforce, the marketplace, the service industry, whatever it is, when true Christians enter their work, Christ enters with them, and together they leave their mark. Isn't that beautiful? That when we enter work, whatever kind of work it is, if we bring Christ with us, we're going to leave a mark there. Work is an act of worship. Let's pray. Well, Father, I know people who love their work. I know people who hate their jobs. It can just be really hard sometimes to do things that we don't feel gifted to do, or we just feel like we're being pulled in directions or led by people that are hard. And this can be a really tough topic. But I believe, Lord, that you've called us to do our best for you. And that maybe we need to make a change, and maybe we need to have the courage to try something new and different. But I believe, God, that you have a calling on each of us to serve well, to your glory. And so I thank you that worship is not just something we do for an hour on Sunday morning, but it's the way we live our lives. It's the way we work. And so I pray that as we kind of wrap up this Proverbs series today, that we implement your wisdom in a way that allows us to provide for ourselves and bring you glory. And God, for those who struggle in this area, for whatever reason, I pray for your grace. And we thank you, Lord Jesus, for being so good to us. We love you. It's in your name we pray. Amen.